Welcome to Base by Base, the podcast that brings the genomics to you wherever you are. Imagine stepping into a future where understanding your genetic makeup isn't just about curiosity. It's really about unlocking precise, personalized pathways to health. What if a simple genetic test could profoundly guide your health decisions? Especially for something, well, as complex and impactful as dementia. We hear that a significant portion of people living with dementia have a positive family history. That strongly suggests a genetic link, right? But how do we move beyond just suggesting to truly knowing what really happens when we integrate crucial details like family history and age of onset into advanced genetic screening? This isn't just about knowing your risk. It's more about personalized understanding and potentially tailored treatments down the line. Today, we're diving into the groundbreaking work of a really dedicated team at the Medical University of Vienna, Austria. Their research has significantly advanced our understanding of how to more effectively identify genetic factors in dementia patients. It makes that personalized future feel, well, a lot closer. So let's set the stage a bit. When we talk about dementia, it's crucial to remember it's not, you know, a single disease. No, it's more a collection of cognitive symptoms, often caused by neurodegenerative diseases. Alzheimer's disease, for example, accounts for a big chunk, about 50 to 60% of cases.
That's right.
But there's also vascular dementia, Lewy body dementia, and frontotemporal dementia, or FTD. And for a long time, we've known about this strong link between a positive family history of dementia and an increased personal risk. But making that insight actionable in a clinic, that's been a real challenge.
Oh, definitely.
Historically, clinics faced significant barriers. The testing was often expensive, results took forever, and frankly, the diagnostic yield, meaning how often you actually found a relevant genetic variant. It was surprisingly low, sometimes only 16 to 30%, even in those early onset cases.
Exactly. And what's truly exciting is how much our understanding of dementia's underlying pathology has advanced recently, especially with the identification of specific genetic variants and, you know, with new therapies on the horizon or even here now.
Right.
There's been a clear surge in public interest and a desire to clarify any genetic components, particularly for those with a family history. This is incredibly important in what we call early onset dementia, or EOD.
Yeah.
That's when cognitive symptoms appear before age 65. EOD cases show a notably higher heritability, making genetic analysis truly essential for personalized medicine.
And when we talk about genetics, what kind of genes are we actually looking at for dementia? Is it just one or?
Well, there are specific genes associated with what we call autosomal dominant inheritance. That means if you inherit just one copy of an altered gene, you're highly likely to develop the condition.
Okay, highly likely.
For Alzheimer's, these include genes like APP, PSEN1, and PSEN2. For frontotemporal dementia, or FTD, we look at genes like GRN, MAPT, and C9orf72.
Yeah.
Now, it's worth noting that this sort of single gene inheritance is relatively rare for complex conditions like dementia.
Right, that makes sense.
More commonly, we're dealing with risk variants. The big one, especially for Alzheimer's, is APOE.
Ah, yes, APOE.
Particularly the APOE4 allele. While these variants significantly increase the probability of developing the disease, they aren't as penetrant, meaning they don't guarantee the disease will develop, unlike those autosomal dominant genes I mentioned. It's more about increased risk.
Got it. Risk versus near certainty.
Precisely. And the benefits of getting a positive genetic test result are incredibly clear. It provides a precise molecular diagnosis, which is just invaluable. It helps inform family members about their own personal risk. It can guide reproductive decisions. And crucially, it opens doors for participation in clinical trials.
That's huge.
This kind of precise information can truly transform how a patient and their family plan for the future, which really highlights the urgent need for better guidelines on who gets tested and how.
You've laid out the problem clearly. Despite knowing these genetic links, it's been tough to apply that effectively in clinics. So how did this team at Vienna actually start cutting through those historical barriers? How did they make genetic testing truly effective?
That's precisely what this study aimed to tackle. They proposed and tested an innovative classification scheme. It was designed to dramatically improve the diagnostic efficiency of genetic testing in a real-world clinical setting.
And their approach sounds pretty smart. You mentioned they adapted a previous model.
Yes, they did. First, patients were broadly categorized by their clinical diagnosis. Alzheimer's spectrum, FTD spectrum, or other mixed dementias. Pretty standard.
Okay.
But here's the clever part, as you said. They then further classified patients by their age at onset using 65 years as the cutoff for early onset.
That was a key change, right? From 60.
Exactly. A key change from previous schemes that often used 60 years. Then finally, patients were subdivided based on the strength of their family history. They used the modified Goldman score for this.
The Goldman score. What does that tell you?
It basically helps estimate the probability of finding a clinically relevant genetic variant. A score of 1 signals a very strong family history, while higher scores, up to 4.5, mean a weaker or less clear family history. So it helps stratify the risk.
Interesting. So they're layering diagnosis, age, and family history strength.
That's the core idea. Their study cohort was quite robust, too. It involves 700 OD1 dementia patients from a memory clinic in Vienna, with data collected over 5 years, from 2017 to 2022. This included a large group in the Alzheimer's spectrum, about 490, some in the FTD spectrum, 29, and others with mixed dementias, around 182.
And crucially, they all had known age of onset and documented family histories.
Yes, that was essential. And for the genetic testing itself, they used a multi-layered approach, sort of strategic. Routine genetic screening for common variants like APOE and the C9orf72 repeat expansions was performed across the whole group using standard lab methods like UPCR and PCR southern blotting.
Okay, the common culprits first.
Right. Then, for patients categorized as high risk by their refined classification scheme, they moved to a more comprehensive approach,
yep.
Exome sequencing, or ES.
A deeper dive.
Exactly. This was done on a subset 38 out of the 51 patients identified as high risk. It allowed for a broad screening of known pathogenic and risk variants across a whole panel of dementia-related genes to really focus the more expensive testing where it counts.
And the results really highlight just how prevalent family history is in these cases, don't they? They found a positive family history was reported in, what, 42% of Alzheimer's patients in their cohort?
That's right, and 48% of FTD patients, and 34% of those with other dementia types. It's quite common.
And what's more telling is that a strong family history, meaning multiple affected family members, or at least one with early onset dementia, that was seen in 12% of Alzheimer's patients, 0.14% of FTD patients, and 6% of other dementia types. So it's definitely a significant factor.
Look, it is, but wait until you hear the breakthrough result.
Mm.
The core success of this classification scheme is truly impressive. Out of the 701 patients, 51, which is about 7%, were categorized as high risk for carrying clinically relevant genetic variants using their system.
Oh, 7% high risk.
And here's the really powerful number. Of the 38 high-risk patients who actually underwent that comprehensive genetic analysis, the exome sequencing, an impressive 39% of them carried diagnostically significant variants.
39%? Wow, that is impressive.
It really is. And these included the well-known culprits like APP and PSI1 for Alzheimer's disease, and MAPT, GRN, and C9orf72 for frontotemporal dementia, as well as the APOE44 genotype.
That's a huge jump in finding answers for those patients. This is where their adapted approach really demonstrates its power. Their proposed classification scheme significantly enhanced the diagnostic yield to 39%. What was it before? Like 20%.
Yeah, compared to just 20% of their previous routine clinical practice, that's nearly a twofold improvement.
Amazing.
And it's important to appreciate the nuance here, too. While a stricter age at onset cutoff is 60 years, like in the original scheme they adapted, it did slightly increase the yield within that high-risk group, for instance, to 42% for AD and 50% for FTD.
Okay, slightly higher yield, but...
But, and this is critical, it missed 4 patients with the APO44 genotype and 1 with the C9RF72 repeat expansion.
Ah, so using 60 missed important cases.
Exactly. This truly highlights why their decision to use that slightly broader 65-year cutoff was so smart. It meant they caught more patients with important genetic findings overall.
That trade-off makes perfect sense. Better to catch more, even if the percentage yield in the high-risk group is fractionally lower.
Right. And diving deeper into APOE44 specifically, this genotype was found in 9% of the whole cohort. That's 39 patients. Notably, it was present in 10% of the Alzheimer's patients, while interestingly, none of the FTD patients showed this specific genotype.
Okay.
Now, what's fascinating here is that while many APOE44 homozygotes often had a later age of onset, the median was 68 years for AD patients in this group. Those who also had a positive family history experienced a significantly earlier onset.
How much earlier?
Their median onset was 65.2 years compared to 71.7 years for those APOE44 carriers without a positive family history.
Wow. So family history stacked on top of the APOE44 really accelerated things.
It really seems to. It underscores how family history can interact with genetic risk to influence when symptoms might appear. It's not just one factor.
So, okay, let's talk implications. What does this all mean for how dementia patients are evaluated and treated in the real world? This strategic approach seems like a potential game changer for clinics.
It really does.
And here's where it gets really interesting, I think, connecting these findings to the latest therapeutic advancements. The identification of specific genetic variants, like those in autosomal dominant Alzheimer's disease, has been absolutely critical. I mean, critical for understanding the underlying biology and for guiding clinical trials, right?
Absolutely fundamental.
Think about the DIAN-TU trial, for instance. It showed that early treatment with amyloid beta antibodies could significantly delay symptom onset in genetically predisposed individuals.
A landmark finding.
That's a profound implication for patient care. It truly emphasizes the immense value of early genetic identification. And the APOE genotype plays such a pivotal role, doesn't it? Not just in risk, but also in shaping therapeutic strategies and potential side effects.
Very much so. The APOE44 genotype is now considered by many to be a near full penetrant, distinct genetic form of Alzheimer's. It carries such high risk.
Near full penetrant, wow.
So knowing a patient's APOE genotype is becoming critical for personalized risk assessment and also for monitoring potential side effects like ARA.
ARA, remind us.
Amyloid-related imaging abnormalities. Basically, changes like swelling or microbleeds in the brain that can occur with these new anti-amyloid therapies.
Right, a known risk with those treatments.
Exactly. And the risk is higher for APOE4 carriers, especially homozygotes. In fact, some therapies, like Leqembi, even exclude APOE44 homozygotes from treatment in some guidelines due to these very risks.
So knowing the status is essential for treatment decisions.
Crucial. And even if someone is currently ineligible for anti-amyloid therapy, identifying APOE44 status is still vital for close monitoring, for potential early intervention strategies, and maybe participation in future targeted studies specifically for that group.
Good point. It's not just about current drugs.
Not at all.
Mm.
And the broader impact of these findings from the Vienna study is clear. This adapted classification scheme is validated as an effective practical tool for memory clinics. It significantly boosts the diagnostic yield, providing crucial insights for patient counseling and risk assessment.
So making testing smarter.
Yes. And it also emphasizes that a negative or weak family history shouldn't automatically rule out genetic testing, especially for early onset cases or specific clinical syndromes like FTD, where heritability is generally higher anyway. You can't just rely on family history alone.
Makes sense.
From a cost-effectiveness standpoint, the study suggests that this strategic stratification can improve the efficiency of comprehensive genetic testing. You could potentially start with more targeted panel sequencing, which is less expensive,
right,
and reserve broader, more expensive exome sequencing for only those cases identified as high risk by the scheme.
Tiered testing, basically.
Exactly. A more rational approach. And it's also crucial to highlight the persistent need for specialized testing techniques that complement exome sequencing. This is important. Exome sequencing alone often misses things like those C9 or F72 repeat expansions, which are a major cause of FTD and ALS.
Because the sequencing reads don't handle repetitive regions well.
Precisely. This study identified 5 such cases in FTD patients using specific repeat testing. That underlines the critical importance of these specialized tests for getting a definitive diagnosis and, again, for determining eligibility for specific clinical trials targeting C9.
So ES is powerful, but not the whole story. You need the right tools for the job.
You absolutely do. Of course, like any research, this study does have some limitations we should mention.
Sure, always important.
Its retrospective nature meant that complete genetic data wasn't available for all the high-risk patients identified. Only 38 of 51 got the full ES. There's also the potential for selection bias. Memory clinics often see a greater proportion of early-onset dementia cases, right?
Yeah, people tend to seek help earlier if symptoms start younger.
So these findings, particularly the percentages, might not perfectly generalize to the broader population with dementia, which includes many more late-onset cases.
Good point. Context matters.
And finally, the lack of comprehensive biomarker data, like CSF or PET scans, for all patients could potentially affect the initial phenotype classification, though clinical diagnosis is usually pretty robust. These limitations really just highlight the need for future prospective studies that can address these gaps, maybe follow patients over time with full data collection.
Understood. But even with those caveats, this deep dive really shows that by strategically combining age of onset and family history strength, memory clinics can dramatically improve the efficiency and the diagnostic yield of genetic testing for dementia. It seems like a clear step towards paving the way for more precise diagnoses and ultimately access to more personalized care.
I agree. It provides a practical framework.
Yeah.
And it makes you think, what does this mean for the future of preventive genomics and neurodegenerative diseases more broadly? How might strategies like this reshape our whole approach to brain health across the lifespan?
A really important question to ponder. This deep dive was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper in the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, Base by Base.